Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee in the studios of WMOT-FM. Chris Harris is back with us from the Department of Electronic Media Communication. He has taken photographs for the Associated Press and many other professional outlets. And if you're a regular listener to this program, you know that Chris has been on before talking with us about images in the media, how they are used and how they are manipulated. And we've got a bountiful feast to talk about. So, Chris, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates has done a 180 on allowing the 44 photos of alleged detainee abuse at Guantanamo to be released to the general public. The government claims that our soldiers abroad would be hurt if these photos were released. Is there any legal reason you can think of why the general public, the American people, should not be allowed to look at these photographs?
Well, actually, under legal reasons, I really don't see anything that would stop the government from coming forth, demonstrating that they're willing to handle the truth of the situation now, as opposed to trying to bury it, try to hide it, try to say it didn't occur, but rather come forward and from this point onward try to maintain a quality assurance that what the government tells us will be truthful and everything else. Now, did they say that the photographs weren't truthful? Of course not. That's what they're concerned about, is if you release these images, it's going to inflame the perhaps the Muslim community more than ever before, although I don't know what really that concern is based on. We're already hated by most of the Middle East for past practices. Let's don't forget that the reason why they don't want to show them is because they're so hideous. You know, and by the way, who started that? Well, it was the American soldiers who started that.
The photos purportedly show soldiers pointing pistols or rifles at the heads of hooded and handcuffed detainees, also prisoners in restrained and humiliating positions. What does this do to the Obama administration's initial promise to be a much more open and above board administration?
Well, by letting Robert Gates bury him, once again, they've bought into the old saw, and that old saw that comes forth from the military aspect is, oh, we did nothing wrong, but by the way, we aren't going to let you see the pictures that might purport to show that we've done something wrong.
Going on to a couple of news networks that apparently have really stepped in it, as it were, one in particular, with regard to the manipulation of media images. Fox News recently showed footage of a rally that they claimed was a Sarah Palin rally, and actually it was footage of a prior rally that was much better attended. Actually, let me correct myself. I believe it was a teabag rally that we are talking about. And the two different types of footage were proven to be not from the same rally because they were not done at the same time. Tell us a little bit about this and whether you think this is commonplace in the networks.
Well, let me describe the situation, if I may.
Okay.
Yes, they were covering a current event, which, by the way, their own reporters, I saw at least two different cuts in that report. One reporter said that they thought that there was 20,000 people there. The other reporter estimated that she thought that there was 45,000 people there protesting. The Park Service later came out with an estimate of about 250 people mm-hmm. were there. So here you've got the reporters driving the visuals. So what did the editor do? Now, of course, Fox News has not let us into the insight, the great decision-making that occurred, but basically what we know is what appeared on air. So they took the rally that they were covering legitimately and interspersed in there, I think it was from a Glenn Beck led rally from the summer. Now, here we are in autumn, and sure enough, at the current event, in the background, you can see that the trees had started to turn colors. They were oranges and yellows and deep reds. And all of a sudden, as you were watching the scene, interspersed without any kind of explanation as to what they were now doing, they made it sound as though literally that they were talking about the same event, and that they were basically going to a wide shot to show that verified the 20 or 45,000 estimate given by reporters, which, by the way, just in its own right is very poor reporting technique. You don't have the reporters guess at that. You have the people who ordinarily do this, which would be the Park Service, actually, in Washington, and they give an official estimate on all rallies. But in spite of that, what they did was they interspersed footage that was obviously shot during the summer because the trees in the background had not changed. This was a heavy-duty report. It wasn't one of those quick little down-and-dirty 30-second reports. It was a good two solid minutes. And what they did was they built the case on totally erroneous information. And is it erroneous when you start editing in footage from another known rally? No, it's not erroneous. It's worse than that. It's that they knew that they were lying, but they weren't going to share that with their viewer readership.
I don't know how you can do that unintentionally. There's no scenario
they
I
had,
can think of in which you can do
search,
that by accident.
They had to actually search up footage that showed a massive amount. So they knew that they were going to a footage that was labeled as another rally. There was no accidental insertion of imagery there. It was deliberate. It was one of those types of things where the actual body who was delivering this information, supposedly a news channel, knew that they were lying to their viewership.
Well, how does a supposedly news savvy television organization think that it can get away with something like this when the executives know that there will be media watchers from coast to coast watching everything they do, not just their loyal viewers, and will be picking them apart 24/7?
Well, first of all, it shows what the news, the Fox News channel, thinks about their viewership. They think that they're dumb. They think that, oh, yes, we can just lead them down this trail and no one's going to notice. Nobody would possibly question Fox News, fair and accurate, fair and balanced, fair and nothing that they do, it appears. It is such a monumental task for them to have gone out of the way to find footage that met the requirements of what their reporters were stating on air. So it's even more complicated than just doing a story where you happen to insert erroneous information, and that is that they were doing the one thing that it may be an unwritten law in journalism, but it's probably one of the most standard views that you would get from any kind of journalist, and that is we don't make up the news. We don't care what the reporter is saying. We don't make up the news.
Right.
But instead, they chose to attack it in a different vein. Our viewership is stupid, so we're just going to give them what we think we can give them and get away with it.
And now for something completely different, but semi-related, MSNBC's host Dylan Radigan, who comes on in the midday right after Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough's program, was chastised recently for showing apparently photoshopped pictures of Sarah Palin on the air. What happened there?
Well, as Sarah Palin is making this very well-attended press rounds for the release of her new book, a situation came up where hard-to-believe photographs were put on the air. No different than what Fox had done, except possibly in the intent, because it was later discovered that it was interns who didn't really know very much who were allowed to go get these images, search them up on the Internet is what they did. And yes, they were obviously poor representations of what Sarah Palin might be doing. And there is no... Let me make one thing straight. I'm not here to pick on Fox, and MSNBC certainly does not get off on this one. They have supervisors. They pay them well. Mm-hmm. and somebody needed to have caught this. I would somehow try to insert that I think that there is something a little bit different from just gross stupidity, which it was in Dylan Radigan's approach on this piece. There's a little bit of difference between that and the active manipulation of the news that Fox News represented with their imagery. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is happening very consistently in the print media. I don't know that anything can be done about it yet. You know, it's not illegal to lie in the news. In fact, it was Fox News that won that decision in the courts in 2002 in Florida, saying that, yes, you can lie in the news, which just proves a point that almost all sides agree on when the news is somehow against something that we want to protect. Oh, well, the news is invalid, that it's made up and stuff like that. Well, it can be. But let's talk about something that's often not talked about. You know, legal consequences usually come in after somebody's been caught with their pants down.
Right.
And that's often referred to as ethical consequences. If you want to be believed, you should be able to publish, whether it is off on television or in print, if you can substantiate the truth that you are trying to publish and get out to the public, fine. But if you know that what you're going to supply your public viewership with is made up out of holes cloth, is absolutely fictitious in its origin, but rather somebody else came up with this idea and we're now going to pass this off as being true news, I think ethically then you have to start saying, wait a minute. I need to protest over this. I need to get people more centered back here. We need to get journalism so it is more center of the road. The old, one of the old statements used to be get at least two sides to every story. I would say triangulate. Try to get three different viewpoints. You know, we've lost UPI here in the United States, basically. So we've got Associated Press, we have Reuters, and we have Agency France-Presse are the basic three suppliers. Of that kind of news gathering information. That's not enough. Now, it's okay when it's overseas because, yes, we'll get different newspapers or different kinds of televisions report. So if we see the same thing occurring in all three reports, then we can basically say, well, yeah, it sounds as though that legitimately went on. But if you saw the coverage of the big event that Fox News did, and then saw it from CNN or any other station, any of the traditional networks, NBC, CBS, or ABC, you would have said, well, something's wrong. There weren't all that people there. There weren't 45,000 people there. So then you would have something to, again, triangulate on and then say, well, no, this one just obviously looks out of the question because it's the only one that went so far as to claim such huge numbers and didn't have any visible proof of it, so they made up their own visual information.
Can you foresee a situation where, say, there's an event at which there's pool coverage? Say C-SPAN was in charge of the pool, it was their time around, and a network takes the imagery and manipulates it to their own desires and according to their own agenda. Could C-SPAN sue that network? Or is that kitty out of the bag?
I think that once it's released, once bad information gets out, You remember newspapers and they used to do their corrections column
mm-hmm.
if they had some kind of question about a story that was done the day before or something like that where you might confuse who the subjects were and they'll come back in and say, mm-hmm. we misspelled the last name.
They might hide it on page 32, but they'd put it in there.
Right, but they'd put it in. By the way, the New York Times is on the second page very consistently. Well, the only place I've ever seen on the internet a correction was also in the New York Times page. Website rather. You don't see corrections as to what goes on that's not truthful, not viable, not supportive on the internet. When it comes to television, You know, people can grab things out of the air now totally legally and steal them and use them. Newspapers, news organizations. I know I actually had a problem with one of my photographs that was intercepted by a newspaper and used without any kind of clarification as to their having the rights to use them or anything like that. This goes on constantly, but the bigger problem to me is now it is stored somewhere out there in the ether on somebody's computer somewhere. It will come up as reference. It's almost as bad to me as using Wikipedia as a reference for anything.
And this is one of the points that you wanted to make. It's sort of the cheapening of the news image by its mass dissemination. The same thing that has happened to the printed word by the very fact that we have the technical wherewithal to send anything anywhere in an instant with a literal mouse click, we have lessened its importance, perhaps not its impact, because it can have impact for good or for ill, depending upon what the image is. But it's we have lessened its import over time, I think.
Oh, absolutely. The real problem comes in with the loss of validity. When photography first came about in the 1830s, but it took until the 1890s for it to hit the massive presses of the newspapers of the time. Why? Because they were held back by figuring out how to reproduce it. Up until the 1890s, woodworking artists would take a look at the photograph, have that sitting in front of them, and then cut a negative of that into wood as an illustration, and that block print would be printed in the newspaper. Along about 1894 or so comes in halftones, which allowed what the famous photographic historian Beaumont Newhall called a faithful witness, which meant for the first time that, yes, we could reproduce photographs and value them for their truth-telling qualities, okay? It was immediately abused. William Randolph Hearst and the war in Cuba, it was meant for him. Jimmy Hare, who was the first acknowledged photojournalist, although photojournalism wasn't even a word at that time, came out of that battleship Maine being blown up in the harbor in Havana. Of course, there's a very famous line from William Randolph Hearst because one of his editors sent him a thing, in fact, it may have even been Jimmy Harris sent him a cable saying that he had some images, but didn't know if it was war. And Hearst, you know, signaled back, don't worry about the images, we'll make the war. You
right.
know? And so, and basically that's how he sold newspapers, of course, was by doing that. So we've always had, from the time that photography became what Newhall called this faithful witness, it had been under attack. Just right from the start. So it's not anything new. It's not anything old. Some ways of taking care of information that you don't want out visually is you censor it. During the first Gulf War, there was an incredible story about an image that came out that showed an Iraqi tanker burned alive in the tank. And it was a very grotesque picture, but it also showed that that war isn't as antiseptic, as clean as those in the government were trying to make it appear at the time. And the Army said, oh, well, we never censored sending that picture out. But one of the sergeants who was in charge of doing all the transmitting, we had to go, literally all the photographs were being transmitted through an Army group that literally was sending them up to satellite and transmitting them out. And as soon as that photograph would make its way to the top to be transmitted, it wasn't censored. It was just taken from the top and put back at the bottom. So it never got transmitted. It had to be smuggled out and was finally reproduced in French news publications, which then broke the story open, which then, of course, leads to this. And that's the other point I want to get across. Always, these stories get broken. There's not a time that it doesn't come by that somebody doesn't say, well, did you notice this in the picture? Did you notice that?
By somebody or other. I mean, we pride ourselves on having a free market enterprise system way of disseminating the news with companies competing with one another. But, you know, because of budget cuts, who has more foreign bureaus than any other American news gathering agency in the world today? National Public Radio.
But well, that's why we get the best news.
Yes. You know, the BBC could not even begin to comprehend cutting out its foreign coverage. They right. specialize in it. They do an extraordinary job with it. And it's not just because they're on a continent with a lot of other countries. This is a rich tradition of theirs. And yet we chastise government control of news as though it were somehow a bad thing. It is in a totalitarian state, but right. that doesn't necessarily mean that a governmentally supported entity cannot provide right. comprehensive, objective news.
Well, you know, let's take the opposite side for a moment. Yesterday was the 40th anniversary of some of the most dramatic images and images that changed the American system of war for the longest time. Now, can you think back in
40 years?
40 years.
I'm thinking more than 40 years to the Kennedy assassination, but that's not what you're referring to. You're
no.
not talking about the Zapruder film.
No, I'm talking about Ron Haberle, who took the pictures of the My Lai massacre.
Ah, the naked little girl running down the street.
No, that's Ken Fook, who is another Pulitzer Prize winning story, who also was one of the... There's three photographs that they think helped in the Vietnam War,
But you're talking about Lieutenant Calley.
I'm talking about Lieutenant Calley. It was photographed by Ron Haberle, who was at that time a military photographer. Mm-hmm. And he was just told to document everything that went on, and so nobody stopped him. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness. Because he was able to get the images out. Now, they didn't play first in Life magazine. That's what everybody thinks. Oh, I first saw him in Life magazine. No, he was the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And Ron Haberle actually took the photographs by and said, you know, I'm out of the Army now. This is something I photographed. I just don't think it's right. Yeah. And, of course, it struck to the heart of what was going on, because if you're fighting for a democracy, you don't go and kill women and children. You don't line them up and kill women and children, which is, of course, what that group of the military actually did. So what did they want to do? Oh, no, cover it up. No, we never did this. Oh, you know, that's the reason why mm-hmm. it only went up the line to a simple little lieutenant is the one who got all the blame. Captain Medina, his supervisor. Didn't get very much. As a matter of fact, neither did Lieutenant Calley. As I recollect, he got 4 years of home confinement.
Well, the grunts seemed to take the brunt of everything. That certainly was the case with Abu Ghraib as well.
You know, so that sort of hints as to why the government wants to cover these things up. Mm-hmm. But we're a better government if we know what's going on, if we can learn from these atrocities and learn that, wait a minute, you don't pull raw recruits and put them in charge of other people. You remember, I'm sure, in a psychology class you had once somewhere in your past, the professor always talked about the test where they brought in students and that they were going to press a little button and it would give a slight shock to another student.
Mm-hmm.
None of that psychological testing had anything to do with whether or not you were going to give a shock to another student. It was that you were going to give painful response to someone else, and that everybody was willing to do it.
Yes.
Well, that's sort of the problem that we've got going on here.
Because an institution told you to do it.
Right. And of course, we can't do that. It does take people finding their own humanity, even at times of war.
Yes.
It can easily be done. But what we don't need is manipulation by any sort of the press. We're big folks. We can take it. We've gone through a lot. We need to understand the realities of what is going on in our existence and what is representing us. And what we don't want representing us is what is normally shown in those pictures.
There's a judge in Chattanooga who is trying to decide whether or not to show pictures of people who allegedly were tortured to the jury in a trial at which a man who is accused of torturing his victims before killing them is being held. Now, it seems to me essential evidence. How can you say it's too gory, so we're not going to shock the jury if there is photographic evidence of people supposedly being tortured, why should the prosecution not be able to present that to the jury and let them see it?
Well, I'm absolutely willing to bet. I'm a state employee, so I don't have a lot of money to bet. But I'd bet this week's money in my pocket that if that judge rules that visual information is not to be admitted into court, that an appeals court is going to come back and say, no. You need to show the information that you have. Of course, that's the wrong place for anybody to try and stop viable information from going to the jury. I would think that that judge is going to rethink that before it becomes something he wants to go forward with.
You know, the last thing I read was that he was still considering it. So as of this broadcast date, that was what I was given to understand. But you say photographs now can be so easily manipulated and the credibility of them can be brought into question so easily that there are some entities that are considering not allowing any kind of visual evidence into a court at all?
There has been statements put forth by jurists in the federal courts in the Western United States that have absolutely stated clear cut that they were thinking about not allowing visual evidence to be used in their courtroom at all.
Ever, by anybody, regardless of whether it was taken by the police, the public, the coroner, a bystander. Nobody.
Makes no difference. This all comes about because it is so easy and so seamless. And what's meant by seamless is that literally you can't tell where something has been done with a very simple, very commonly available software program. It's one that I teach here at the university to sophomores called Photoshop. And Photoshop gives the tools to whoever wants to manipulate any aspect of a photograph. And think about it. A typical 35-millimeter photograph scanned in at a normal, not a real high resolution, but a normal resolution, has about 64 million pixels of information. Pixels are picture elements. It is what makes up a digital image, is you have these pixels that basically are on and off switches that say whether or not they have color, contrast, etc. So if you've got 64 million of them, and you go and you adjust 640 of them, and they happen to be around the eye, so you can change that eye color, and no one would ever be able to tell the difference. Your eye cannot differentiate 640 pixels out of 64 million. So even if you get up to larger sizes, you know, now I'm beginning to actually hear from, and usually it is women, recording artists or celebrities, who are now complaining that in their last cover shot for whatever big magazine, they slimmed them down too much because now when they're seen in public, the public says, oh, you've gained so much weight or whatever. So now there's an actual backlash. And of course, never trust a trade publication for it. It has no requirement to give you the truth. What I mean by trade publication is Women's Day, is Modern Bride magazine, is Home and Garden magazines. Of course, they're going to make things look as best they can.
Because they're trying to sell that industry.
Absolutely. So there's no requirement of truth for any of that. What we're talking about, the thing that is, I think, so incredibly important for us as Americans who value our news gathering potential, is that we try to keep news gathering away from using manipulated images.
Chris Harris, thank you for being with us today. This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at the same time next Sunday, our new time of 8 a.m. Don't forget you can catch us on the internet at mtsunews.com, download the podcast at your leisure, and we're available on iTunes.